You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people who make them and do not necessarily represent the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or any of its affiliates or advertisers. And welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth. Thanks for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Some of you are tuning in for the very first time tonight. Welcome aboard. We're glad to have you. And you've made a good decision, I can tell you that. And I think it's something that you'll want to do each and every night. And I hope you do. I hope you get addicted. There are no interventions available, and no interventions would work once you're addicted to this show. All right, if you're new, you need to know that we have a free weekly newsletter. That free weekly newsletter is called the K-Files E-Zine, and it comes out, as I said, each week, comes out on the weekend. So that means you've got time to subscribe if you haven't done so. Just go over to kevinsmithshow.com. And you'll see the button. It's got red letters, and it says K-Files E-Zine. Just click that and subscribe. Two things you need to know. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. And secondly, when we say no strings attached, we mean it. We don't share the email list with anybody. We don't rent it out, sell it, anything like that. So you're not going to be spammed as a result of having subscribed to our newsletter. I have held off on talking about this, the thing that I'm going to talk about now, because, well, I won't get into all the whys, but I have received a lot of email recently that focused on this item. There's a lady by the name of Blossom Goodchild, and she is a apparently getting a lot of attention. Not apparently, she is getting a lot of attention because she is predicting that on October the 14th, there will be massive UFO events, massive UFO sightings around the world. The reason I've held off, I think you know, it's not that I think she is wrong, it is that I don't know that she is right. And I don't want this show to get tagged with, well, we promoted it and then it didn't happen. Well, I want you to understand I'm not promoting it. If it does happen, wonderful. If it doesn't, oh well, we've seen a long, long line of those, haven't we? But Blossom Goodchild, lots of very interesting and credible people have sort of gotten behind her and her message, and they're saying that they think it will happen. Well, we will see. October the 14th, that's the day. All right, very quickly, let me tell you, I saw on the local news today something I talked about a little bit last night, and that is they were reporting about the snow that NASA has reported on Mars. Here's what they said. They showed a picture that NASA had provided, and naturally, NASA has colored the picture, so the sky is pink. Bless their hearts, they were commenting on, they wondered what pink snow would look like. But at least, They told us that NASA has reported snow on Mars. Oh, well, they seldom get it right, but sometimes they get close. We'll be back right after this with my guest, Thomas Dickens. You have enjoyed a lot of his work. You just didn't know it. Well, now you're going to know it. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I am your host, Kevin Smith, and my guest this evening is someone whose work you have experienced, you have enjoyed, and perhaps were not aware. Now, some people, you know, after the movie is over, they stay and they read all the credits. So you may know the name. But Thomas Dickens, Thomas Randall Dickens, is the... I guess, president, CEO, owner of Mesozoic Incorporated. And that is the name of a company that does work for movies, all kinds of work. Some of it is CGI work. Some of it is real-world effects. Some of it computer-generated effects. But some of the movies that you have seen that he has done work on. Let me just read a few of them. American Pie 3. Now, there's a look, I've got, you can see, I've got three pages here of movies and motion pictures. Motion pictures, television, and video carriers and education projects. But American Pie 3, Dukes of Hazzard, Fat Albert movie, The Chronicles of Riddick, one of my favorites, by the way. I love that show. Out for Blood, Vlad the Vampire. SpongeBob movie. A lot of you have children that love SpongeBob. Well, he did work on the movie. Girls Will Be Girls, We Were Soldiers. Wow, what a movie. A Beautiful Mind, an Academy Award winner. Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Spider-Man, Stuart Little, Stuart Little 2, Anaconda, and Stargate, Carnosaur, Adam's Family Values. Lots of movies that you have enjoyed, and Thomas Dickens helped to make those a reality. He has now written, produced, and directed a movie by the name of Alien Gray, Zone X. Thomas Dickens, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Your work, you know, I was looking at the dates on your work, and it goes all the way back to 1985. So you've been at this for a while.
Yes, I've been working on effects for a long time. I started off doing traditional effects, as they're called, stuff like stop-motion animation, walk-around suits, matte paintings, conceptual designs, miniatures, and that kind of thing. And then when Jurassic Park came out and I saw that computer technology was just amazing, I learned how to use that over working on Anaconda was my first film that I did CGI work on, and I've been doing CGI effects ever since, but I also know the traditional, so I can do a bit of both.
Do they still, Thomas, use the traditional effects, or is it all CGI these days?
There's still quite a bit that's done traditionally. Even on films like Star Wars, a lot of what you see is CG, but a lot is still miniatures. It's still used quite a bit. There's still a lot of makeup effects, which have actually gotten better and better over the years, more and more realistic. There's also a lot of miniatures, and it's still a lot of physical effects, but you know, CGI has really gone much, you know, larger in recent years.
I remember when I first saw the first Star Wars movie, I was just absolutely flabbergasted by the effects. The effects are so much better now than they were then that it's unbelievable. But at the time, it was just, boy, that was just fantastic stuff. It still is fantastic stuff, but it's even better now. You know, one of the things that I thought looked so realistic, although I understand it probably is not scientifically realistic, were the explosions in space. In Star Wars, when they would shoot a ship and it would explode, you know, and you'd see all those sparks and that fire and all of that. And I thought, man, how did they do that? That is just cool.
Those types of effects are still usually done traditionally. They'll do real explosions, although there is CG fire and explosions too, but still quite often fire is done traditionally and composite into the scenes.
I would like for us to talk about this movie that in fact, you've just finished it, haven't you?
Well, actually, it's still in post-production. What we finished so far is what I'd like to call Alien Gray Zone X Part 1, which is actually not the final film, which will be Part 1 and Part 2 together. But what we've got so far is the first, basically the first half of the film is very close to finished. It's still, some of the audio is still being worked on, even the edit is still getting the final polishes. But what we wanted to do is get the film done, and it's been in production since April of 2007, and then it went into post-production, and the film has many, many special effects in it, which take a while to do. So it's actually still in production, but we did finish the first half, and it's been screened at the New York International Independent Film Festival, both in Los Angeles and New York City, as far as the part one part. And I believe that it was very well received so far, which is a real pleasure.
Tell us a little bit about this this film. I know when you say Alien Gray, you've got the attention. You got my attention, and you've got the attention of the audience. Now, I want to say this for new listeners, and then I'll let you tell us about the film. Folks, here on this show, we talk about anything strange and unexplained. And it doesn't mean that in every case we're talking about aliens or that we're talking about UFOs, but we do frequently. And so if that's the kind of thing that you enjoy hearing about, this is the show. And we often, throughout the year, bring guests on who are contributing to entertainment side of that genre. Thomas, so that you'll be aware, we've had Masha Kalinina on, who was in Blood Countess. We've had Dean Haglund, you know, from X-Files. I've had some movie producers like Jamie Foxx has been on, and David Serretta, that they do documentary-type things within the genre of UFOs. And now this movie that you've produced is science fiction, and it involves, you know what's really cool? I mean, this is a mind bender for me. You didn't just focus on the UFOs, extraterrestrials, alien grays, that's there. But you also have somebody with a bent mind. You've got a madman. So tell us a little bit about this.
Yes. And then real quick, I just want to say something. The actual production company that we formed that actually produced the film, it's got a little bit of an odd name, but it's named after the film. The production company is called Alien Gray Zone X 1B LLC, and Mesozoic Inc. is the one producing the post on the film, all the editing and music and special effects, just to get that on the table. But you're right, the story is going to, the film's going to appeal to everyone, I think, and it touches a lot of different subjects, and I think it's got something for everyone, for people who just want to see an action drama movie. It's got a lot of exciting scenes, and for people who, you know, want to think a bit and walk away with a conversation about the different subjects that they're going to talk about when it's done, it's got some depth to it as well. And I think it's a return to a genre that's somewhat lost, which I like to call the fantastic film, which is showing you things and that you can't see in your ordinary life and making you think about them and talk about them. But going back to what you said, yes, the film, it involves a group of people who are deep into the desert, and there's a strange power outage that happens that just shuts off all electrical equipment. So our hero, played by David J. Burke, who also is a co-executive producer along with myself, we both produced the principal photography on the film, and David Burke is a great character in the film. He plays Park Ranger Don Morgan, so he's the park ranger of the park when the power goes off, and he's checking it out, and he finds some people that are stranded in the desert, and he has to help them get to the water. But in order to get to the water, they have to go through into a military test zone similar to like an Area 51 type area called Zone X. So once they enter into the Zone X, bizarre happenings begin to happen, including visitation by gray aliens and different creatures that they come in contact with. Also, someone that broke down due to the power outage is a character called the Madman, who is played by James J. Zito III. And he is someone who has broken down just like the others, and he's kind of working in stealth, following after this group, and he wants to get a hold of their water and supplies. So the crew is up against a lot. They're up against the weather of the desert, the harsh conditions. They are being they find out that they're sort of in an experiment by Greys to find out how they are going to react to different stimuli in different situations. And also the Greys are able to basically make anything appear, like visions, so they can manipulate matter or maybe it's in someone's mind that they're seeing creatures such as gigantic spiders or reptiles that the group has to battle, and ultimately Don Morgan has to save the group and fight the different things that they're pitted against, and the aliens are trying to see how the people are going to react to this. There's also another side sort of subplot, which is it really aliens, or is it, because they've entered into this military area, is it some kind of mind control experiment where they're actually just thinking they're seeing this stuff. So it's going to make the audience have to really, it's going to make them talk about it a long time. I think they're going to want to see the movie more than once and catch all the different things that are going on in it and form a lot of discussion amongst the audience members. I think they're really going to enjoy it a lot.
All right. I took a look at the different movies that you have done work on, and a lot of them I have seen. As a matter of fact, there's one on here, Dinosaur Valley Girls.
Yes.
Would you believe I saw that, and I saw it in Indonesia?
Oh, my goodness. That's great.
Yeah, that's where I saw it.
That film was a pleasure to work on. That is when I was still doing stop-motion animation.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, at the time, I thought I would be, it was before computers, so I thought I'd be doing stop-motion the rest of my life. And This was directed by a personal friend of mine named Don Glute, who has produced several films, and he's written many books on dinosaurs, which I'm also a member of the Society of Vertebrate Paleontology. I have an interest in prehistory.
Mm-hmm.
So we became friends, and then eventually, back in 94, I believe it was, he hired me to be visual effects supervisor for that film. And it's fun. It's fun working on independent films. I've worked on independent films with very low budgets, and I've worked on films with gigantic budgets. And they're all fun to work on. The independent films, sometimes you can't necessarily do everything you want to do, but sometimes they're more fun. And it was a lot of fun working on Dinosaur Valley Girls and the different stop-motion dinosaurs and that. Of course, looking back on it, we wish we had more time and more money to do it. You do it even better, but we worked with what we had.
Well, I would suspect that Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone was not a low-budget film.
So that one we had a group of artists that were supposed to come up with different character designs for the troll and for Norbert the Dragon. And I did my concept design drawings for Norbert the Dragon, and I guess the directors and producers liked it, so that was the design that they went with. So when you see Norbert, that's I designed that little bud dragon.
That's your baby, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Now, in this movie, at the beginning of the show, when we had our first break, what I did was up on the screen, I put the poster for Alien Grey Zone X. And let me do that again. Let's see. It's going to flash the wrong picture first. And give me just a second. And there we go. Right there is the picture. That's the poster. Now, that alien looks somewhat like the greys that we have seen, but it looks a little more menacing. Are the grays... Now, first of all, is that your design? Did you design this gray?
Yes, I did. And, there is a certain... It's sort of like, in a certain sense, I guess you could say it's somewhat like a human. A human looks like a human, but humans have such variation. There's different colors of people. There's different body shapes and sizes, different sexes, so... And I'm assuming that grays must have variation, and there's also different species of grays or similar aliens. So this one was designed by me, but I think it follows along with a lot of the descriptions that have been seen with maybe a little artistic license. This is another thing you'll find in this film, that there's really nothing that's just flat out answered. It's I guess similar to an Outer Limits or Twilight Zone or a X-Files type show, where it's made to make you think. So if I just told you everything outright, then it wouldn't make you think. You would just be watching it, and you wouldn't be talking about the film after you leave. But this one, in the beginning, the aliens are kind of scary. It's almost they're playing tricks on these people, and they seem pretty vicious or sadistic and in their experiment. But over the course of the film, we learn a lot more about them, and we learn that they're trying to find out. I don't want to spoil the ending of it, but there's a big change and reveal in the end, a kind of twist ending that we get to learn a lot more about the aliens and an explanation of why they were doing what appears to be menacing to the viewer and to the hapless group that's in this film and sort of tormented by them. But at the end, we find out that there was a different sort of motive or control on that.
Mm-hmm.
As to why they were acting the way they were. But in the beginning of the film and partway through it, they get pretty menacing. They, which goes along with what a lot has been said as well. They, as far as abductions, they haven't been all present.
Thomas, I hate to break in, but we have to take a break. Folks, more with Thomas Dickens and the making of this new film. You're hearing about it before it actually gets to where you can see it. And that's what I call being first. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. You're listening to The Kevin Smith Show, and I'm your host, Kevin Smith. My guest this evening is Thomas Dickens. And when we cut away for break, we were talking about the different types of aliens, and you were saying you would assume that there are variations in them as there are in humans.
That's right. In this film, we actually see the audience is going to really have an enjoyable time. And I think that one great thing about the film, again, is that I think it appeals to all different kinds of people. You don't even necessarily have to be really that interested in the subject matter to enjoy it. It's just an enjoyable film. But I think people who are interested in UFOs and aliens are going to be very happy because they're going to finally see these creatures featured. And
So let me ask you a question about that. Now, you're the writer of this film. You wrote the script, right?
That's correct.
All right. Now, in assembling the various pieces of information that you need for writing the script, did you do some research into the stories about gray aliens?
Yes, I did. I must say that I've learned more along the way with this film about it than I knew before. And still there's experts that go way beyond my knowledge of it. One of which I'd like to quickly mention, there was Robert Morningstar of UFODigest.com who was in the screening for the film in New York, and I would invite people to go to UFODigest.com, and he's going to have the press release regarding Alien Gray on the site. I believe tonight it will be posted, and of course Robert Morningstar spoke little while back on your station, and a great guy, and he's very knowledgeable on the subject. So I have a feeling that my knowledge of this will even expand as I meet more people and talk about it. But I did some research. I've also seen some of the other films that featured these characters, such as Communion was a big influence. I hope people can forgive me if I'm using the wrong terminology, but we have what I guess you'd call a basic gray alien, and he's somewhat the leader of the group of other aliens in this movie. Mm-hmm. And we have a tentacled gray alien who's a little taller, and instead of jointed arms, he's got tentacled arms, which is somewhat like the ones in Communion. Also, at the end of the film, there's a stockier blue alien. So that one's a great alien as well. I think people are going to love it. And when they beam aboard the ship, this is in the end of the film, so this part isn't complete yet. But just for the record too, all the shots in the film are done. They're all shot. The entire principal photography, all the actors. It is a live-action film with actors. We shot it at Red Rocks, Nevada, and also Pear Blossom, California at the Devil's Punch Bowl, and also parts in Los Angeles. But all of the live-action is shot, so the rest of the film, the part two, as I would call it, is still in the process. And something to come is when they actually, again, I don't want to spoil the ending, but at the end they meet what I would call a luminous gray. So he's kind of like the main leader of all of them, and he's more spiritual and more evolved, so there's a variety of different aliens, and I tried to get as much information as I could before I wrote the script, and I've just really had a great time with it. Also, one quick note also is that the film was shown both in Los Angeles and New York City at the festival, and their site is nyfilmvideo.com, and the film won the best science fiction feature genre award there. So everybody on the Alien Grey movie is really proud of its success so far, and the different people have shown interest in it, including the show.
Well, and let me tell you why we're interested in it. There are a lot of scripts that come out every year. There, as you know, there are a lot of books that come out each year. There are a number of those that get sent to me, and I would assume to other talk show hosts. And I don't want to sound cruel, and I don't intend it to be cruel, so don't anyone take it that way. But most of what comes out is pretty much ho-hum, yeah, okay. There's not anything really interesting in the plot. And you can tell they're going to be relying heavily on stunts and on special effects, and there's nothing wrong with that. That makes a movie more exciting. But if the plot's dead, it really doesn't matter what special effects you put with it. You got to have a good story. When Robert Morningstar told me about this movie, and he told me about the madman, now to me that made it interesting. Instead of here are some people and they've gotten into a restricted area and the government's hunting them down, and so we've got a madman hunting them down, and that's different. And I think that is a great twist to have in this plot. I think and perhaps twist is not a good choice of words, but I think that's a good angle for the plot. I'm really looking forward to seeing this thing. And
I thank you very much. And that is a fun part of the movie. And part of the reason that the madman was introduced to the script was when I was writing it, first of all, if I had my way, I'd be seeing creatures 24/7 in films, because I love seeing creatures. However, like you said, it needs a story, and it needs to have something driving it, and this particular story has the added menace of the madman character, played again by James Zito III, who is just a great actor, and he also knows martial arts, as does the lead star, David Burke. So they were really meant to play against each other, and there's a fight scene in the movie that's really amazing, and also a scene where Don has to battle the madman, which is just the battle just builds between them in its ferocity, as we find out that both of them actually have paranormal powers. So in the beginning, it's just more just two men against each other, but Don Morgan character, he is a character who is he's a park ranger, but he is also studying spiritual the spirits. He's trying to live the best life he can. He's trying to perfect himself as a man. He eats raw food, vegan diet, this type of thing. And the interesting thing is that the actual actor, David Burke, actually is very similar in certain ways to Don Morgan. He actually is a bodybuilder. He's won one of the strongest men in the world awards. He's Australian. I thought of him as looking a little bit like Robert Redford. Different people say different things, but he's a great star, and he's got these powers in the film, and he's trying to learn to use them more, like his telepathy and being able to lift objects and things like that. And part of the story is that he's learning to harness these powers. But when he meets the madman also has powers, but he's sort of on the dark side, as you'd say.
Mm-hmm.
And he's using them for more menacing purposes. And there's some great scenes where, you know, Don confronts him. It's very epic, and tries to, you know, find out why he's turned towards this side, and that he doesn't have to, and this kind of thing. So it's really great. But the madman is a great character. He's another thing that I guess one of the films that really influenced me as well was a movie called Evil Dead 2 by Sam Raimi, who also directs, you know, Spider-Man, and also Army of Darkness he did. And he has the character Bruce Campbell in there, who plays Ash. And this is an actor who is very over the top in those films. And he's just completely in your face. He's a complete show stealer. I mean, when he's on camera, you're gravitated towards him. And I was looking for an actor that would be able to play the madman that had the same screen presence as was David when we were looking for the different actors to play it and interviewing actors, and James Zito turned out to play the part excellently, and he's just completely extroverted. He's when he gets on screen, you have to gravitate towards him, and it brings a completely different element to the film as well. The film is pretty serious. It's got some pretty scary scenes. It's also, you know, the group is in a tough situation, stuck in the middle of the blazing desert with the torment of these aliens and creatures after them, and a madman. But when he comes on screen, it's a very interesting dynamic where he's both scary, but in a certain sense he's almost funny. He's like, because of the way he talks and the way he acts, so it's he really comes off almost like a split personality, which is what we were going for, and he's got a great stage presence. And
there's another angle.
What's that?
There is another angle.
Yes.
To this plot, to this story, that really interested me and got my attention. A lot of the sci-fi movies that come out about aliens, UFOs, you've got a group that's investigating something, and they get all tangled up in this investigation, and there are people hunting them down, shadowy, quasi-government people hunting them down, and so forth. And we see that, you know, that's kind of the plot line for, you know, it's kind of a template that gets used for those scripts. But your people had absolutely no intention of finding alien greys. What they're trying to do is survive, and they just stumbled into this experience with alien greys, not looking for it. And that part of the story reminds me of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where you've got a guy just driving down the road. He's not planning anything about UFOs, and it just happens to him. Now, the reason I like that is because, first of all, it's underused, but also that's the way most of my audience who have had encounters with UFOs, that's the way it happened. They weren't looking for it. They weren't planning it. It just happened to them. And I think that gives us something a little more realistic to identify with in the movie.
That's right. I agree. Another thing, just for the record, I mean, this film is, I believe, is going to really take on Hollywood. And yet, it's not a Hollywood picture. It definitely stands in its own as unique. I would probably say the closest genre you could say is a sort of a cult classic. some of its, again, some of its influences are the early Sam Raimi films, the early Spielberg films, including Close Encounters, like you mentioned. That,
Thomas, I hate to do it, but the break is taking over and it's going to shut our mics off. But we'll be back, and we'll pick up right there. Folks, we'll be back more with Thomas Dickens, the creator of this brand new film that's not even available for you to see yet, but you're going to get to see it. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Let me remind you of a couple of things very quickly. Let me remind you that if you have not yet subscribed to the K-Files e-zine, get over there to my website and subscribe. It's free. There's no reason you should be in the dark. And you can unsubscribe anytime you want to. Let me also remind you, if you have not yet gone over to alienseekernews.com, be sure you do that. Alienseekernews.com is a great resource for all kinds of information about everything having to do with the stuff we talk about, aliens, UFOs, NASA, strange anomalies on the planets. It's a great place to get information, and you can join over there for free. Don Allis, good friend of this show, owns the Alien Seeker News, so be sure you do that. All right, we're talking with Thomas Dickens, and Thomas Dickens is, you really can't put a title on this guy. He is so many things in so many different projects. He is the writer, he is the producer, he is the director, he has put together this film that we're talking about, and the film is Alien Gray, Zone X. Thomas, when we cut away for break, we were talking, I had just made the comment that this script, this plot, is interesting just on the face of it, before we ever see the movie, because it's bringing us to this... It's bringing us to these alien grays with things that we can identify with. Most of us, most folks cannot identify with being a secret agent. Most folks cannot identify with doing secret investigations into a secret restricted government base. But we can identify with the car breaks down and we're stranded and we've got to survive. And we can identify with madmen because we know they exist. They exist in society around us. And the surprise for us is as they are trekking to survival, they run into these alien grays. And then I understand that you have the alien grays cause them to have to do battle with some other creatures and cause them to see some things that may not be exactly true. And that it is an experiment. And that's where we get elevated and transported into the science fiction. But here's the question. How much science fiction is that? Now, the reason I ask the question is because a lot of people that listen to this show and other shows, similar shows, are of the opinion that a lot of information that is genuine, real information is being given to us in movies. And it sort of acclimates us to the reality. So let me ask you, what level of reality would there be in these grays?
Well, that's a great observation and a great question. One of the things that this film is really doing, I think the last film that maybe kind of did that was Matrix. It made you think about the reality around you, you know, kind of what if? What if this was all generated and it wasn't even real, that kind of thing. This film is going to make you think, and you're right, it's the grays the you know, gigantic creatures, some of which is a gigantic spider. There's UFOs in the film. There's a gigantic reptile creature. There's a huge flying monster, and there's a just a sort of massive creature at the end of the film. And you could say that's science fiction, and I think maybe a few years ago it would have been. But now, I think the question in the film is partially also is how much of this is science fiction and how much is possible? And is it possible, in other words, for the Greys to manipulate matter? Or are they manipulating matter, or are they putting images in your mind? These things aren't real. But to you they're real. They're just as real as anything else. You know, such as another film I worked on called A Beautiful Mind, where you know, the main character in that film, forgive me, it's based on a true story. I forget his name, but he was seeing people that would talk to him, agents of the little girl. He would see people that would talk to him and interact with him, and to him those were real people, but to the rest of us they didn't exist. And in this film it's the same, where it's taken to the next level, where you know, what is possible that that might be coming, either in a physical world. I mean, we've got genetic abilities to mix different animals together, we've got cloning, there's also you know, even just the ability to do mind control and make things appear that we might be able to see. There's holograms. Also, the characters are, you know, in the desert without water. Is it a mass hallucination they're having? Or is it truly the aliens doing this? And the other topic that comes up with it is just something to make people think is, you know, how much of the way we think about our world or is in some way presented to us on by the media or by books or by conversation or possibly even something bigger. I mean, maybe some kind of technology that controls what we see and think and hear. Who knows? But it's, I think it's interesting to think, you know, as a society about what we accept as real. This is the real reality, and that, oh, this is science fiction or this is fake or this is impossible. But I think soon those in the film and also in reality, I think it's starting to happen. It's getting closer and closer that the lines are blurring as to what's real or not.
Are you familiar with a movie called Dark City?
Yes, I am.
You know, I thought I saw that one when I was in Indonesia as well, and I thought that was just one of the great movies that I had ever seen, because it catches you by surprise. But
right.
I want to make a point from that movie and then ask a question. The point from that movie is this. Here were people, they were humans. They had memories of their families. They knew who they were married to. They knew what their job was. But overnight, they were actually not on Earth, but they believe they were. And overnight, each night, the entire city would change, and these aliens would give them whole new memories, new histories, new jobs. And the next morning when they woke up, they believed, they lived that day believing everything was normal. Except today, I'm not Kevin Smith, the radio host. Today, I don't even remember that. Today, I'm Kevin Smith, the neurosurgeon, with the abilities to do it. And that changed overnight, every night.
Yes, that's a great film, another one that makes you think.
And you know, when I walked away from that film thinking, you know, what if? What if, yeah. We think we live for 80 years and die. But what if that's not the case? What if
another thing?
You know?
Yes. Yeah, that's a great thought. Is the other, that, like you said, there's just, I think it's just it's just a wonderful thing when, I think one thing to happen with science fiction in recent years, aside from films like the one you just mentioned, Dark City, but many films have just become fluff. It's almost like a soap opera, but they've got laser beams and there's some aliens thrown in. Just, you know, just some visual pizzazz to get your attention. But the science fiction I love that influences this film was stuff like the films of Ray Harryhausen, who, in the 50s, 60s, and 70s did the amazing, gigantic creatures, and him and Willis O'Brien, who was really the father of, creature animation in films, and, films by Spielberg and Hitchcock, X-Files, and this kind of thing makes you think. And I think that's what it's all about is science fiction should be used as a vehicle to start conversation, so that when you leave that film, you don't go, let's go get a coffee. I mean, you're going to leave that film, and you're going to go, wow, you remember this scene? What did that mean, do you think? And it sparked conversation.
All right, we have to take a break, and when we come back from the break, ladies and gentlemen, we'll continue our conversation with Thomas Dickens, creator of this brand new science fiction film that is set to revolutionize science fiction films. We'll be back right after this. This is the Kevin Smith Show. I am the Kevin Smith, and my guest this evening is Thomas Dickens. Now, we're going to open the telephone lines here in just a moment. And when we do, the telephone number for you to call is 602-539-9580. We'll get that up on the screen for you in just a moment. When you see it come up on the screen, that's how you know the telephone line is open. Let me also say, for those of you who live outside of the United States or you live outside of Canada, we have flash messages available. You can send me a flash message with your question or comment for Thomas, and I will read it, and we'll ask him to answer it or to comment upon it. And you do that by going over to the website, kevinsmithshow.com. Scroll down. You'll see the picture of Thomas Dickens. You'll see a little blurb about tonight's show. And you'll see in great big letters, you'll see the telephone number to call, and right under that is where you'll see a link that says flash message. Click that link and send me a flash message, and we'll get that on the air. Now, don't wait till the last 2 minutes of the show to send it to me, all right, because it'll be too late. Thomas, before we open up the phone lines, we were talking about the purpose, and you said the purpose of science fiction is to make us think and to get us talking. And let me ask you, as you think about this movie, you wrote it, you produced it, you directed it. As you think about this movie, if you went to see it, what do you talk about? Do you talk about the Greys? Do you talk about the madman? What do you talk about?
I think all of the above. But, I think it's just going to open up conversation. And one of the things you're gonna think about is aliens and the possibility of... certainly of their existence and of their ability to affect us, and what are they? This is one of the interesting things of the film as well. Is kind of I think part of the question is to question reality in general. What are we exposed to? Not just the more bizarre things, but everything that we take in. How is that influenced by something we saw in an advertisement? How is our generally accepted thoughts, question those thoughts. Even your own most hard knowledge, you know it's right, think about that and just talk about it with people. That's what a lot of this is about. But I think you're going to talk about, there's going to be, the film's very episodic. It's got different episodes. I think it's similar to Star Wars. Like, you remember the scene when, when Darth Vader was, trying to convince Luke to, go to the dark side? And I think there's going to be scenes like that that you're going to talk about. There's very memorable scenes. You're going to talk about, I think some of the stuff that you're going to, talk about is all these different possibilities that are brought up in the film, as well as just exciting scenes. I think there's a lot of that too, that I want the listeners to know, is that this is also just an exciting movie. I mean, you're going to see some stuff that you don't see in your ordinary life. You're going to sit there, and I think that's also what movies are for. It's just the fun of it, the visual pizzazz. And a lot of the creature films and monster movies these days, it's always in the darkness, and it's something moving so fast you barely see it. In this one, it's more of a fantastic film where you see, the main character, Don Morgan, battling a giant creature in broad daylight. And it's just a lot of fun. I'd like to just mention something else real quick. We have an original score by Terry M. Hudd. So the music in this thing is just amazing. I think people are going to love to hear that. But to answer your question again, I think there is so many aspects that they're going to talk about. Everything from just, wow, wasn't that a cool creature, or wasn't that a great scene, down to, like, wow, in questioning, everything. I think their political beliefs, and yet I want to say something else, too. It's not a film that's meant to mess with your mind. I don't think people are going to leave this theater going, I don't know who, if I should trust my neighbor now, or I don't know what's real anymore. I think you're going to leave this. It's definitely a positive film. It's certainly got dark moments in it, but I think you're going to leave it, just sort of questioning your world around you. But it's not meant to mess up your head or something like that.
All right, let's go to the telephone line. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, hello, it's Kevin from North Bay, Ontario.
How are you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing, Thomas?
I don't think he can hear you. Can you hear him, Thomas?
Yeah, it's kind of staticky, but I can hear.
Okay,
yeah, that's my phone line, yeah. The phone company we have here stops the phone.
Yeah, you got a question or comment for Thomas?
Yes, Thomas. Thomas, have you read anything from Whitley Strieber?
Forgive me, Kevin, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, have you read anything from Whitney Strieber?
Unfortunately, I have not.
Because I wanted to know if the description of the Greys in your movie, if they would have anything to do with or have any comparisons or similarities to what Whitley Strieber has written. That's what I really wanted to know. Okay, have a great night, guys.
All right, guys. Thanks for the call.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, Whitley Strieber would have. That's the movie Communion would have been based on his writings about Greys.
Oh, so, forgive me. I did read that. I'm sorry to the caller. Yes, I did read that. I just sort of blanked on the name for a minute. I'm sorry. Yes, I did read that. That was one of the influences. I mean, the book was claimed to be a true story. And I remember reading that, and it was, when I read it, it was great. It was quite frightening. I also have, seen the film. And, again, that was practical effects, traditional effects before CG. And I thought that those were very expertly done. And, yes, that was another influence, definitely. I mean, this is, the aliens in my film are, that one was based on an actual event. This one is based on inspiration from actual events, but it's definitely its own story.
All right, now let me ask you this. You had to come into contact with a whole lot of information about UFOs and a lot of information about extraterrestrials, Greys. Prior to doing this film, have you had an interest in UFOs? Have you had an interest in extraterrestrials? Or is this something something that you sort of picked up as you started researching for the script?
I guess a little of both. I mean, I've always been an open-minded person, and I've always thought of the possibility of these things. And you know, fortunately or unfortunately, I haven't come in contact personally with with the aliens. Although I have had some interesting experiences, some unexplainable experiences. One of which was a sort of out-of-body experience thing that I went through several years back that sort of was intruded onto me. I didn't ask for it. I didn't, do anything to prepare for it. I wasn't, drinking or any drugs or anything like that, but this happened, and it was a strange event that happened to me, and I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was something spiritual. I don't know if it was something in my mind, a hallucination. I don't know if it was aliens. I honestly don't know. It was something that happened to me. There's been a few other events. I've never come directly in contact with aliens where I've talked to them or seen them or anything directly.
Well, have you come to, through the research that you did for the, for writing the script, have you come to any conclusion as to whether you think they are real or not?
Well, that's, it's something I'm still open to. As a matter of fact, there's some video that I've seen from everything from the research I've done to even just some of the stuff on YouTube that is just incredible, including some of the stuff that Robert Morningstar from UFODigest.com brought up. But there's some stuff that is just, even as a I do visual effects for a living, okay? Uh-huh. I've worked on some of the biggest films, and I know that CGI effects can make things that are indistinguishable from reality. However, many of these videos are done by amateurs or policemen or members of the military that don't have access to any of those visual effects houses to be able to make something like this. And there's a few that I've spotted that looked completely convincing, but I personally thought that they were still effects. And then there's other ones that is just so blatant that you're just going like, this is something. It's either an alien or it's some kind of technology that we don't understand, or maybe some kind of even life that lives on Earth that we haven't seen much of that appears sometimes. Or maybe it's something in our mind. I don't have the answers if it's real or not, but I do say that there is definitely something out there beyond the regular things that we come in contact with every day, and that not there's probably some fake videos out there, but there's certainly some that were shot for real. And real quick, funny thing about that, I was working on one of the shots in the film where I had to effect in it, and I'm going frame by frame through the shot, and it's all high definition, so it's really high resolution, and I saw something moving through the shot, and there's actually a shot in the film that could have a rod in it. It may be an insect. Again, I think it needs to be investigated, but there's a shot with something moving extremely quickly through the shot, and it appears to be in the sky behind the mountains as opposed to in front of it. So it's a little bit larger than a tiny insect in the foreground. So I'm certainly open to it, and this universe is either gigantic or it's infinite, most likely infinite. And it just doesn't make sense that there's nothing else out there. And I would say I lean towards believing that this is real. There's something out there. Although there is other technologies made by man as well, which the film talks about, mind control. It's hard to tell I think it's going to become more hard to tell what's real and what isn't.
Sure.
In the future as these technologies grow. But, I'm definitely open to the possibility that they exist, and when I was writing the script, it just sort of
yeah
go there?
Yep, go ahead.
Okay,
We do have one on hold, though.
Okay. I honestly have written a lot of science fiction scripts and that you know, have different plots and things like that. But this one was different because it was, the other ones were just like a monster movie or something. A giant dinosaur gets projected into the modern day world or something like that. But this one is based on real events or on possible real events or the types of things that are happening or that are possible in our world, and which brings it to a completely new dimension. And being my first feature was really great to get into something like this, which is something beyond just fluff. Or beyond just a horror movie or something like that.
This one has several really interesting angles woven together, and I really commend you for that. Let's go back to the telephone, and caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Yeah, Bob.
Hey, this is an amazing show. I had a question for Thomas.
All right, go ahead.
Well, actually, this is one of the most exciting shows I've heard in a while. This movie, I think everybody is gonna be seeing, and I can't wait to see it. But I guess my question would be, are you going to dig deeper into the stories of UFOs and what they look like? Because there's some amazing stories about different lights and different things and technologies that people can see and stuff. Are you going to dig deeper in and maybe possibly come out with more in this genre and show a lot of your talent with the special effects of UFOs? Thank you.
How about that? Are you going to dig deeper into the genre and maybe come out with another movie about this?
I certainly hope so. Of course, this is a film that's still in progress, so first order of business is to finish this and finish this film. And this is not a Hollywood budgeted film, so it's an independent, lower budgeted film. And by the way, I just wanted to say the website to anybody that hasn't gone. It's A is in Apple, G is in George, Z is in Zoo, dash X is in X-ray.com. AGZ-X.com is the website. So check it out and send. There's contact emails if you want to say hi or even get involved in it. It's still in production. So in post-production, so that would be great. But that's the hope. I mean, the hope is that this, I really think it's going to happen. That this film's going to really, it's going to be a cult classic. I think it's going to get a lot of. There's definitely going to be fans. You know, people who just really think that it's really cool and they really like it. And we've certainly got sequels in the planning. I've actually even outlined a sequel already, and I think it would be it's such an amazing gateway to other projects, to sequels, even a prequel. How did Don Morgan get these powers in the beginning? Because in this film we begin and he's already kind of got some of his powers, so let's learn how that started. A lot of the stuff has been outlined already and a lot is still open, and I think it could also be great to open up even a television show similar to Twilight Zone, X-Files, Outer Limits type thing. The difference being that this one would also have the state-of-the-art effects that are pretty visually amazing, that you'll see things that are just really kind of gigantic creatures and things that maybe aren't in some of those other shows, but it's got somewhat similar subject matters and things, but we also give the real pizzazz and visual pizzazz to watch it and keep it interesting and keep it cool. But the hope is, yes, sequels, television, I mean, maybe even a video game. It's certainly got the merchandising in just the creatures that different things that I just think people would like to have, and fans would probably love to have model kits of the creatures and all that. But all that
you actually have you have worked on
story
some
in the movie.
You have done work on some video games, haven't you?
Yeah, I have. My last you know big job before shooting this film was for Sony for a video game called Lair, which is I guess it's kind of like a Dungeons and Dragons type thing. There's like dragons and different men in armor and stuff like that. And I did visual effects supervision and CGI supervision for the cinematics for Lair. By the way, I worked with an animation supervisor named Harry Walton, who's a real veteran in the business, who's also an ex-stop-motion guy. And I've been friends with him since 1990, and he ended up working on Alien Grey as well, so it's a real pleasure to have a real veteran. He worked at ILM on Honey, I Shrunk the Kids and RoboCop and huge movies, and we've remained friends through the year, and Harry Walton has done effects on it. Also, Bob Calendrello, sorry about his last name, Tom Haney, several other effects artists have assisted. I also want to say real quick that as far as the stunt, the fight, we had world kickboxing champion Lali Hutez and also Shi Xinghui, who's a world champion, do the stunt choreography on this film. So we have an amazing fight scene that was set up by real people who have world awards for it's an independent film, but it's got some amazing things in it.
How did you get into all of the leaving the movie for a moment, let's go back to Thomas Dickens. How did you get involved in doing these animations and these effects?
Well, it started at a very young age, and it's hard to say where that stuff starts from. I know even as a child in kindergarten, my mother saved drawings that I did, and I was drawing UFOs and monsters and things like that, and spaceships and stuff. Even as in kindergarten, I have those. Maybe it was something I saw on TV. Maybe it was my imagination. I'm not sure. We didn't watch a lot of TV growing up, but I was interested in it from a kid. And early on, even I think I was 12 years old. I loved the Ray Harryhausen movies and movies from Willis O'Brien and Jim Danforth and some of my great influences. And I wanted to learn stop motion, so I learned as much as I could. At that time, it was still kind of like a magic trick. They didn't have all the books on it and everything, so it was difficult to learn. But as a child, I learned stop motion. I actually taught it in a children's museum called the Discovery Center. And I just learned more and more and more originally about traditional effects, and then, like I said, eventually the CGI, which it all just grew towards doing what I want. I also went to a college in Ithaca, college in New York, studying cinematography, and Ringling School of Art and Design in Sarasota, Florida, studying illustration, because I also do paintings and illustrations and concept design. So I've just been into it my whole life. We used to stay up late at night, which is kind of different these days. They don't really have, I feel kind of bad for the kids of today, because me and my brother used to stay up late at night and watch movies like The Blob or like Outer Limits, and we'd stay up till 4 in the morning and have to be real quiet, and so my parents didn't hear us because they didn't want us doing that. They wanted us sleeping. But we both were into science fiction and staying up late and watching cool movies, which was a lot harder. There wasn't that many of them made back then. So a lot of the older films really inspired me, because I think those are the same types of things. They were thought-provocative, made you think, and started conversation, and were pretty bizarre. They didn't really follow the Hollywood pattern, and I got into it at a young age.
Yeah, you're talking about The Outer Limits and The Blob, and, some of the really old, really cheesy-looking sci-fi stuff. is the most fun these days because it engages your mind again. And, you know, that's what it's all about. All right, we have to take a break, and we'll be back right after this. Back. It's the Kevin Smith Show. I'm Kevin Smith, your host, my guest this evening, film producer, director, writer, creator of all manner of fantastic, wonderful things that you see in a whole lot of movies that you have seen, Thomas Dickens. The telephone number, and let me say that the telephone line is open. Let me double check to make sure that is the case. It is the case. The telephone line is open, and we would love to hear your questions or your comments. And the number is 602-539-9580. 602-539-9580. Tomorrow night, you want to be sure and be here as well. My guest tomorrow night is John Hutchinson. And some of you are familiar with his work. If you're not familiar with his work, you need to check it out, John Hutchinson, and then you'll see why you want to be here. Now, Thomas, you mentioned earlier that you, in the movie, you sort of in passing, you mentioned about when they get transported on board the ship. Do we ever see the exterior of this ship?
Yes, we do. We see several ships, and some of them are, you know, based on some of the videos and some of the different information that I researched, and some are kind of pretty much imaginary or made up from my imagination, or in a concept design, something to you know, have a cool look to it. Mm-hmm. But the at the end, we the ship that they're beamed aboard is actually. It's a giant mothership, which is loosely based on some actual sightings, but it's also it's a creation that I created with a concept design, and it's just that's a massive mothership. And then there's other ships in the film. There's triangle shaped ships. There's saucers, a couple different saucers. There's one that's shaped a little bit like a boomerang type shape, and there's also rods. There's several different rods, as well as kind of like a sort of like a small tripod type creature that actually rope small like a robot type.
All right, now in your movie, the rods are they living creatures or are they ships?
Those are in the movie. They're in the film. They're actually not really living creatures. They're almost like spy devices. It's kind of like
unmanned drones.
Yeah, they're kind of like unmanned drones. And then there's one type that can fly and it can land and it kind of changes shape and the legs. Come out and it has three legs and it walks around. A lot of people have loved that little robot because it's a rod, but it lands and walks around and it kind of moves like a creature. It moves like a living thing, but it's obviously made of metal. And a lot of people originally when I shot it, a lot of those little rods were kind of just going to make real brief appearances. But every time that people see them, they say, "Oh, you should put more of those in there." So I'm actually adding effects as we go. That weren't even in the script, so it's kind of great because it's just little visual things that kind of makes you go, "Did I just see that?" So I don't really focus on it and make it this big effect, but it's more like almost a subliminal effect, which it's kind of fun for viewers too, especially the fans that are going to watch it one day and probably freeze frame every frame and try to see if there's a rod in it. And there are a couple in there that that are pretty hidden. So you might have to sort of go through frames to see them. But there's some rods in the film. But those are more of the type. And I've seen a lot of videos on rods, and they appear to be more like living creatures of some kind. But they're always kind of blurred. It's hard to tell, but they appear to be that way. A little more sinewy with the waving on it, but these are more like kind of metallic. They're like little ships, but I don't think anything's living inside of them. It's just sort of like a drone, as you said.
Rods are just fascinating, absolutely fascinating. I have had Jose Escamilla on the show several times, and he is the film producer that has produced some documentaries about rods, and has got some of them with high def video, and when you freeze frame it and look at it, it's just amazing what they look like.
Yeah, they are incredible. Actually, those I've learned a lot more about since after shooting it too. I had a definite interest in them, and I was kind of just like a completely bizarre new phenomenon that I didn't know much about, but I thought could play a part in this. And I didn't really know what they were. Were they living? Were they from this earth? Were they from another world? What were they? And they were put into the film, but they're kind of more of a, they're not the main focus of the film, but they're in there, and it's just another added element that's really something cool. But the real ones are an enigma.
Well, the first time I ran into rods was on television. There was a documentary on television, and the documentary was one produced by Jose Escamilla. But you probably have seen it. There is this deep hole in the ground that down in, I'm pretty sure that it's in Mexico, and people will jump off the rim of this thing and jump into the hole with a parachute. And as they were filming that, they discovered rods in flying all in that big hole that they jump in. And that was my first encounter with rods. I had never even heard of them, and several years ago I saw that. And so you've incorporated those into your movie as well, but you've changed their nature a bit.
Yeah, these are definitely kind of like a different kind. I think they're kind of inspired by the rods, but I'm not trying to say that this is what rods really are. They're like kind of like eyes and ears for the grays, although some of the shapes were loosely based on some of the early photographs that I saw, and then later I started to see including that video, I started to see much more descriptive video that really shows a lot with a lot more detail what they look like. But when I started first designing the rods for the show, I tried to base it on those, but the pictures were very blurry and very hard, so it gave me a lot of creative license on how to design those. We're just using that as a basic design, the photographs. But in the end, people are going to love the rods in the show. But they made in the film, they're not actually even called rods. No one actually says, "Look, there's a rod." So that's what I kind of call them. But they may be called drones or sentries or something else in the film.
No.
I'm just calling them rods because they move in a similar fashion. They move very quickly, and they were inspired by those. But rods appear to be living things, and these are more like mechanical, almost like robot ships.
All right. Now, when you take us on board the ship, I assume you do because you said they got transported. So you take us on board the ship. Where did you come up with the concepts for what it's like on the ship? Did you have any information from witnesses, or is that pretty much from your imagination?
It's that one probably is more from the imagination, and it's actually those are some of the shots again that's in the very end. So the final design is still not even completely locked yet. It's actually gone through a phase. Originally, it was more of a light, almost like a light ship, and then it became now it's a bit more of kind of like a polished surface with a lot of geometrical shapes, and it's a little bit more tech looking, but it doesn't have any kind of the film doesn't have any of the kind of tech look like you see on spaceships from Star Trek or Battlestar Galactic or something. It's not like that. It's definitely like a I tried to imagine and I'm certainly because those shots aren't actually completed yet, I'm open to more research. Although I also want to say that this is a science fiction film, and I hope that all the people who are interested in, you know, greys and UFOs, in the reality of them, and those being a real item, I hope that they love this film. But it's also, they have to understand that this is fiction.
So, sure.
Some of the things are changed a bit.
Who's your favorite science fiction writer?
Ray Bradbury, Gene Roddenberry, H.P. Lovecraft, trying to think of other ones. Yes, those are some of the great ones.
You know, my favorite, because it was he wrote the first science fiction book that I ever read, was Robert Heinlein.
Oh, yes, and another one, yes.
Yeah. Arthur C. Clarke, before he was famous, wrote a whole bunch of short stories that were science fiction, and I forget where. I think I was going through the airport in Amsterdam, and I saw a paperback book. It was a collection of his short stories from back when he was in college, and I grabbed that, and that also. I mean, there are just some phenomenal. You can take that book and take those short stories, and some of them are very short, but you could take that and work that into enough movies to last a lifetime. Arthur C. Clarke was phenomenal.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Yes, there's definitely, as the previous caller from California was asking earlier, Bob, I believe it was?
Yeah.
He is. That's the hope. Is that this is just the beginning? Alien Gray Zone X will have a great fan base. It's going to appeal to people who love this type of genre. It's also going to appeal, I think, to just everyday people. And my real hope is that it really just opens people's minds and lets them observe the world around them and say, what's possibly going on here. And what's the news telling me? How is my reality being formed? And how is some of my rigid belief systems? That I'm positive, I'm right on. Let me just think about those once. That's an interesting thing, which I think Gene Roddenberry in the early science fiction films, even the original Star Trek, I think did that. It was all about what mm-hmm. if what if a society had so many people in it that it had to have a lottery to figure out who lives or dies. And these types of things is something that I think when you're done watching it, you talk about that. I'm trying to kind of bring that back, but my hope is, and my belief is that this is going to take off, and it's going to lead to more films like this, which it's full of action, it's full of excitement, but it also has a meaning to it, and it's not just fluff.
All right, we have to take a break, and we'll return right after this break. More with Thomas Dickens. And if you have a question or a comment, you need to give us a call. The telephone number is on your screen. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the show. My guest this evening is Thomas Dickens, and we're talking about this new movie. Now, you may be saying, well, I haven't heard of this movie. Well, yeah, because it's new. I mean, really new. It's not even out there for you to see yet. He has completed shooting all of the scenes, shooting all the shots. They're doing post-production on it now. And you're getting to learn about it and hear about it before it comes out. Based on what I have heard, I have not seen it, but based on what we heard from Robert Morningstar, this thing could be some real gangbuster movie here, or maybe a better term is blockbuster. The only problem is when you say that these days, people think of the brand, the store, Blockbusters. Thomas, when are we going to be able to see this movie?
That's a great question. One of the things going on right now, just for a little update on the film, is, like as mentioned earlier, it's being shown in festivals. It was shown in Los Angeles and New York at the and won the Best of Science Fiction Genre Award there. And it's in application for Sundance to appear in that distribution world. We also have sales agent Stephen Thompson who actually connected all of this. So I'd like to say a thanks to him. But and he's getting the film exposed to different distributors who can distribute the film. And you never know. It could partially have to do even with the audience out there on how much they want to see it. Because one idea that we have in mind right now is because people want to see this film, and yet there's hundreds, literally hundreds of CGI creature effects, which take a long time to do, and being on a limited budget, it's difficult to get it done in a short amount of time. And one of the concepts we're looking into is sort of a pre-release, so people can see this first half in its entirety. And it's 60 minutes long, so it's not like 15 minutes. So we're looking into that possibility, depending on the interest level of how much we see. That may be something that has to happen so that people can see this film even before it's fully released. As far as the final release date, it depends on a lot of factors. We're working on it every day. Getting shots done, getting the music done and the sound effects, and independent production is not like Hollywood where they throw $250 million at a picture to get it done. We're always trying to make ends meet and get this done and keep up the quality as high as it can possibly be. But we're working on it, and we hope if things go well, it could be as early as 6 months from now, and no matter what happens, it's going to get finished, and it may take as long as a year. We just aren't sure. But there's also the possibility of that pre-release, which would be the release of Alien Grey Zone X Part 1. And we may do something like that because the public's been calling for it, and we don't want to make them wait too long. So that's a possibility that we're looking at. But as far as the final release, one of the things that can happen is that when we're showing it to distributors, we're hoping that that one of them will pick it up, and we're waiting for the right one. By the way, but we've had some offers. We're waiting for the right one that's really going to distribute it in the right way, so the biggest group of people can see it. But also, we're hoping for some finishing funds to really give it that final polish, so that it really competes with Hollywood, which is what we're trying to do with it, and that's the direction it's going now.
Well, I think it's a wonderful thing that it's already winning awards, and I would imagine that means it will win many more. But you know how you will know that you have really made it? It won't be the awards, not even if it wins an Academy Award.
Yep.
Here's how you'll know you've made it. When it shows up in Asia with subtitles.
Yeah.
That's where I saw so many movies.
Everywhere I've seen it. You're right. And you can still see it in Indonesia like you did those other films. Yeah, that's going to be great. I just wanted to say something real quick is, this is something that I've been trying to do, ever since I was a little boy. A lot of people have dreams of stuff they want to do, and maybe they're hesitating. And on this project, it kind of all came to the right time, the aliens theme and the whole, you know, just all came together at once. I met up with David Burke, and it was tough getting a great cast together who was believable. Like you said, these are like real people who are going through an event here. It's not a make-believe or, you know, type of circumstance that we can't relate to these people. These are regular people that are confronted with a strange thing. Real quick, I got the cast, beautiful Holly Poplawski, the great Wallace Dorian, Chris Harper, Trevon L. Collins, Jai Johnson, Teresa Giamusso, Jason D. Edwards, Jessica Walker, and of course James Zito III as the madman. And we've got a great cast, and everybody worked really hard. And in the end, this was shooting this movie ended up being the funnest thing I've ever done in my career. So it's just what I want to do, and I would encourage anybody to, you know, get out there and live the American dream and try to make your dream possible. If it's working on independent films, do it. I mean, it hasn't been easy, and it still isn't. It's a lot of work, and sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. But you got to just keep working at it, and it's going to get done, and it's gonna really take off, and people are gonna, you know, you're gonna love it. And it like you said, you know. Even if it doesn't, you're living your dream and you're making it happen. So.
Well, I'm looking forward to this. I really am. And people listening to the show would have no reason to know what gets sent to me. But I get sent books. I get sent scripts. And why would people send me a script? Well, they send me a script because they would like for us to do a show and for me to interview them about their story. Their script. And so I get all kinds of stuff. I read incessantly. I get lots of DVDs. I get lots of, in television they call them pilots. I'm not sure what you call it with a movie, but it's kind of a pilot, kind of a concept. I get those. And I see a lot of stuff that I think is good, but it's only okay. And I want to say again that what really caught my attention was Robert Morningstar's description of the plot, because I was hearing things that said to me, hey, you know, this is different. And I don't know how to describe this. I imagine this film as being a more realistic, fantastic film, just because of the human element in it. Even though we know it's science fiction, we know it's a fantastic film. It's got creatures. We know that. But we have things we can identify with. And I like the thing about the car breaking down. And you have to hike to survive. I like that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in Phoenix, Arizona. And I can tell you, if your car breaks down very far outside of Phoenix here, I mean, like just a few miles outside of Phoenix, not very far, you're in the desert.
You're in trouble quick. That was another inspiration. Is one time my wife, Beata, and I, before we had kids, two children, Kalia and Hayden. Wonderful kids, but before we had kids,
Thomas, I hate to do it, man. The end of the show is taking over, and we're being evicted from the microphones here. I'm okay. Sorry, folks. Go to my website. The links to Thomas Dickens' websites are there, right beside his picture, and I think you'll really enjoy what you'll find there. Thomas, it's been a pleasure, and I hope you'll come back and be with us again. And especially when this movie is released.
I look forward to it, and I really appreciate it. And you've got an amazing, great show, Kevin. And I really appreciate this opportunity to speak to you and your fans.
Well, thank you very much. If you will, just stay on the line with me, and I'll be back with you in a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, my friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do, too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.